This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is an iFanboy Special Edition podcast on Star Trek Beyond. Special Edition iFanboy podcast on Star Trek Beyond. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And our special guest this week is iFanboy, former contributor, often podcast guest host, Mike Romo.
Hey, guys. Very happy.
Not only friend of the show and lifelong friend, but probably one of the biggest Star Trek fans I know.
Pretty good. So, pretty solid.
So, all right.
So we've gotten together. Mike was on our show for Star Trek Into Darkness, and that's the last time we'll try to talk about that. So we thought it'd be good to come back and talk about the third film in this reimagined franchise, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek, and
the lens flare verse.
Lens flare verse. And this one premiered over Comic-Con, which is the reason why this show is coming out a few days later than we'd like it to. But that's just what happens around Comic-Con, and. I think, Mike, it's probably important to talk about how we saw it because that may or may not have informed our opinion of the film.
I was going to say, do you want to talk about how you saw it or do you want to rub it in my face?
No, it's mostly rub it in your face and everybody's face, really.
we'll do the long version just to make it really clear.
Great. I'm sitting here with my chin on my fist, ready to listen.
Yeah, squeeze tight. We were really lucky. We went back in May to a Star Trek fan event. We were lucky to attend where really it was clear that Paramount was like, look, basically, we knew a lot of you guys were not happy with Into Darkness, and we want to make sure that you guys understand that we get it, that Justin Lin is a great choice for this, and that we're really excited about it. And so we went to the Paramount lot and went. I forgot which studio it was. But it was like 22 or 20 where they shot the original series. Some of the original series was shot in that same studio.
Wow.
Soundstage. And they proceeded to show all these things. You know, it's the Star Trek 50th anniversary, and they had all these stars talking about how important Star Trek was to them. And then they brought out a few of the actors, the leads, Carl Urban, Chris Pine, and Zachary Quinto. And they basically, Adam Savage did a Q&A, which was really great. They were all really excited about the film, obviously, and showed some clips from it. And The whole evening sort of led up to basically saying, we understand that just how important these characters are. We really want you to see that we get what it's – that it's not just an action film that Justin is making, but a real sort of – it hits the right note in terms of, look, we understand this has got legacy, that these characters mean something to us, and we want to have fun with this while making a summer blockbuster. And so we got to see them christen the Leonard Nimoy Way, which is they made a little street in the Paramount lot. And we had a big group photo taken of all of us with Leonard Nimoy's family and the stars, the aforementioned stars. And then we had a big basically a big, huge party with props, and they had set pieces and costumes and silk screening of the shirt, and they gave us cool posters, and it was, according to Whitney, the happiest night of her life, which makes me feel weird about my wedding, but that's great. But it was a really great thing. So, and then but the key moment was, hey, so, you know, we're really excited about the premiere of this film. We're going to do it. We're going to have a live orchestra doing the music. It sounds like really cool. And the entire audience is, yeah, sounds really cool. And then J.J. Abrams said, and everyone in this room is invited to the premiere. And it was basically the most nerdy Oprah moment I could yeah. have ever
You get a
experience.
Premiere. You get a premiere.
You get a premiere. You get a premiere. And so we came in pretty excited about it. Flash forward to the realization that it's on Wednesday night in San Diego of Comic-Con, which is also the same temperature of the surface of the sun at an outdoor screening of the world's first IMAX screening.
Outdoors.
And it was a very, very intense physical time for the premiere. But once the sun went down and the thing really got going, it was a great night. They brought out the full cast.
It was a big fan night. They had, first of all, it was 3,000 people. It was an outdoor IMAX screen. It had 3,000 people come.
Where was it in San Diego?
The Embarcadero South, the little park behind the Comic-Con.
Was it by the Hilton Bayfront?
Well, it jutted out from there. So if you go out where all the boats are parked, you go sort of in the middle of that area and then go out, and then there's a big stretch of land. They've shown other films there, but they've never – it's nothing of this scale, apparently.
So we were there from 5 p.m. till 11. And as Mike said, after the sun went down, we stopped baking alive. You know, we watched a full episode of the original series.
Open Mind Maneuver.
Nichelle Nichols came out for a little talk with who's the producer that's doing all the MC work, Mike?
I don't know. He's part time producer, part time like super fan MC. So I forgot his name.
With her on the stage, and we got lucky. We got in early enough that we had second row seats, so we had really nice seats for the talks and everything. Then they brought the entire cast of the film out. Conan O'Brien emceed this little discussion with them, and J.J. Abrams and Justin Lin.
It was off the chain, actually. Conan was really funny, and all the cast came out, and it was actually a pretty emotional kind of thing, because, you know, not only had we lost Leonard Nimoy, but we had lost the actor plays Chekhov.
Anton Yelchin.
Yeah. And we ended up having this sort of, I got to say, one of the longest moments of silence that I've been through. And it was intense to watch the cast kind of really, really sort of realize, wow, this is it. It's opening night without our friend.
Yeah, it was a little musical tribute to him because of the orchestra. As Mike said, there was a live orchestra. And so while that was happening, they brought the lights down. But since we were in the front row, we could see the cast all getting this giant group hug that they held for the entire song. And it was really intense.
It was the music from the first movie where Kirk has sacrificed himself, you know, at the very beginning, which, you know, is a beautiful piece of music, but is also like sob inducing. So it was really kind of very public private moment. But, you know, from where we were sitting, I mean, we really could sort of feel how raw the emotion still was. But, you know, they really made a point. They had a little costume contest. I mean, they fed us. They gave us free ice cream. I mean, there were a lot of things where they were really – there was a sense from Paramount that we were going to do this right. We're really grateful that you guys waited outside. We're really grateful that you're here. And so we entered this film with a stratospheric amount of goodwill.
I was just gonna say, is there any way this movie could have not liked this movie after this?
Well, you know, if it was Into Darkness, I bet you I could.
We really, but, really hated Into Darkness. The good news is, and we'll jump into the film now after that long preamble, but it's important to know where our headspace was. I thought this was a ton of fun. This brought back the goodwill feeling of the first one, and leading up to these movies before going to San Diego, I rewatched a good portion of the original series. I watched two, three, four, and six of the original cast films. I rewatched the first Star Trek JJ film, and so I was all primed and ready to go for this. And I thought this sort of brought back that people have described this film as. And the spoiler warnings, we'll have to talk about the movie and there'll be spoilers. So people have described this as an extended original series episode. I think that's kind of the feeling it had.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the original series episodes, if you want to compare them, say, to a Next Generation episode, really just fundamentally is that you get the problem at the beginning, and then you spend the entire episode trying to solve it or get through it. Whereas Next Generation, you're in the situation, the problem comes up at the very end, and they solve it just like that. So they really did a great job, I thought, of establishing the world, and then the inciting incident, and then I thought pace and just the way this thing was constructed was really good. But what were you going to say, Rob?
Oh, no, I was going to say that actually, Mike, I think it was you. I saw you commented. I've tried to stay, you know, completely. I read the article about Justin Lin and Wired, and I think that was the only bit of press I read about this movie beforehand. And I tried to avoid whatever I could just because I want surprises in my life still. And actually, I'm mad at you guys because you guys at the Comic-Con event, Idris Elba was there. Yeah. And I was like, why is Idris Elba there? And so,
wow.
But I didn't even know he was in the movie, right?
He's very handsome. You know, Ron, that's why he was there.
I know. I saw the outfit. I know. But I did see on Facebook, Mike, I saw you comment and said you had said that you liked it and that it felt like an old episode. And that got me excited because, as you know, we've talked about many times, like, I'm an old school, like original series was my entry point. Like, talking to my dad about watching the original series and poring over those three seasons and all that sort of stuff, that's kind of how I got introduced to Star Trek. So hearing that got me excited going into it. Now, that said, I did not have the red carpet treatment of Chris Pine walking me to my seat and then and then sitting next to Carl Urban like you guys did.
Zoe Saldana does a great back rub, I gotta tell you.
Very strong, firm hands.
Real strong,
firm. Ron, what did you think of it overall?
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I thought I thoroughly enjoyed it. I agree with you that it felt like a glorified good episode. And that's kind of the realization that I had about these movies is that I feel like we generally and talking about the Into Darkness kind of the reaction, which I didn't hate Into Darkness as much as you guys did, but I understand the problems with it. And I don't want to get into talking about that. But these movies don't need to be the end of be all end all. Like, you can just do an episode like it felt like this was an adventure. And I like the fact that they're three. The movie starts with Kirk with a, you know, captain's log, and he's saying how they're on year three of their 5-year mission. So really, if you're mapping it to the original series, it's at the end of when the original series was, because that was only 3 years. Right. So you get the sense of them being in space for a long time and the stress that has to do with it. And he's getting a little tired and now here's an adventure. And by the end of this adventure, he's revitalized and ready to get back out there. So I really, really liked it. There's one major aspect of it that I didn't like. But we'll get to that. But all in all, I was positive about it.
Well, so. I loved, and they had shown that life feels episodic sequence in the fan event. And that alone really made me really excited for the movie. Because
it's important
to
note
really
that we were skeptical.
Because the first trailer was
terrible.
Oh, awful. And for me, like, I was furious because I really feel, frankly, that when you blow up the Enterprise, you're being super lazy. I mean, it's happened so many times.
That's the one thing that I did not like is that I did not like that they destroyed the Enterprise. That said, the way they did it was really cool, and I've never seen that before.
Right.
But I agree with you. I think blowing up the Enterprise is lazy, and I believe that was the Justin Lin was like, yeah, I'll do it if I can blow up the ship.
That's interesting. But
it did serve a purpose in that if you're going to blow it up, at least have the consequence of splitting the crew up. And I like that everyone's got a buddy aspect of the story. But also it leads to into NCC 1701A, which is the, you know, sort of following on the next.
Yeah, I felt like they, you know, yes, I was really frustrated when I saw it in the trailer. But I thought that this was one of the most emotional renderings of this sequence that I've seen ever. I mean, seeing them, it didn't just, you know, streak off into this, you know, into the sky and crash. I mean, they really tried to save it, and they tore it apart over this much longer period of time than I anticipated. And seeing each of the crew members do what they needed to do, like, I thought that whole sequence, I thought that the action was motivated, and it made me believe that it grounded me into the movie much more than I thought it would. And I thought they were really successful, and I love seeing some of the technology, the evacuation pods in the bridge itself. That made a lot of sense to me. The way they split the crew, that made a lot of sense to me. So in a way, it was like, okay, you're going to blow it up, but you're doing it really, really well in a way I haven't seen before. And
yeah, like the idea of the villains or the bad guys or the people that they're fighting being like a swarm of locusts and being these little tiny ships that are pointy and like surgically taking the ship apart, cutting off the nacelles, then cutting off I thought that the whole strike against the Enterprise was really well executed in a strike against the Enterprise in that they wanted to disable it, get on board, and get something off of it. So that made sense. So, like, while I hate the concept of destroying the Enterprise, it was really cool. I think you could have told this story without destroying the Enterprise, but that's just me. And the thing is, I was really thinking about it. And Connor, I thought about this for a good, at least 14 hours at this point.
Well, I've been thinking about it. The minimum amount you can think about it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I wanted to put some time, but then I got busy. But I got 14 hours aside, and I thought about it really hard, and I realized that there were two points in this movie where I got emotional, where I got teary.
Oh man.
Right. One was when the Enterprise was destroyed, because I realized that my relationship with Star Trek not only is with the crew and all that and that sort of stuff, but it's also with the ship. Like I see the dramatic shots of the ship leaving the bay get me every time, because it's to me the Enterprise, that design of the Enterprise is so classic and it's so meaningful and inspirational that whenever they destroy the ship, I always get upset. And we've seen the ship get destroyed how many times now, Mike? Like a lot.
But that's a testament to the as Mike said, this particular sequence, in that it was stretched out. You saw the effect on everybody. And one of the things, one of the great strengths of this film was that it was really well balanced. We should credit Simon Pegg and Doug Jung, who were the co-writers of this one. I thought they did a great job of giving everybody a lot to do. And one of the things that I saw during this film, which I don't think I've seen before, is that it was a reminder that these guys are all basically in the Navy. And you know, in the past, everyone has their specific roles that they fill. Bones is a doctor, but he's also in the Navy. So in this film, he has to shoot people, and he has to fly. He has to be a pilot. You remember? All right, these guys aren't just these specialized colors on their shirts. They are actually they're military men. And I know there's a whole schism in the fandom whether they should be military men or not. But they are in this particular world. And so they're Navy. And I like seeing Bones have to actually do Navy stuff and not just, that was really great.
That's a good segue to the point of that I wanted to make about this, which is just I love Carl Urban.
He's the best.
I love Carl Urban. I love Carl Urban as Bones. I love Carl Urban in this I want more Carl Urban. when he wasn't on the screen, I'm like, when are they going to get back to him? He was delightful. He was delightful in this.
Well, that is another good point too. The balancing of this film was fantastic. These films can live or die by how the balance between character moments and action sequences. And I thought that maybe I've never seen a Fast and Furious movie, but maybe Justin Lin is so used to having to deal with a large cast.
It had to help.
It was fantastic. I mean, the only thing, there were less lens flares, but way more spinning camera angles.
He loves the spinning camera.
Did you notice that?
He loves
the spinning camera. Nothing can be static. It was like a Michael Bay, but going in 360 degrees. But Carl Urban was fantastic, and I think we really got to see the original sort of triumvirate, right? The original trilogy. That's also made it like an original series, Star Trek. It felt like the last film, at least, tried to make Uhura and Spock and Kirk be the trilogy. But this one really, you felt the friendship between that really great scene.
The Bones and Spock scene was fantastic.
Yeah. They all got him. I mean, I do have to say that whole opening sequence is so fun. I mean, him opening the closet and there's all his uniforms, right? The gentle laughs that you got, where you're like, oh, I get to settle down into this film and look at the arguments on board with the cohabitation. I mean, I thought that really made the nerds and the geeks and the fans go, oh, thank you for showing this side of this, because that's what an episode could do. You could see the everyday. It could be like Data's day for the first 10 minutes. Why not? And so it really gave this foundation. So when it did tear apart the Enterprise, which reminded me of the X-Wing fighters taking down the Death Star, it was like, wow, boy, the Federation really should have thought about this stuff. Right? Yeah. It was like those shields didn't have a chance. It was amazing to see it so completely decapitated. And it was, like you were saying, Ron, it was a very emotional thing. And I loved it. Even when the Enterprise was literally down for the count, they could still use the thrusters and make it its own weapon at the end of the day by flipping it.
Yeah. That was like great. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of really cool stuff with the, I mean, if you're going to destroy the Enterprise, use it well. Use it like that. I also really liked the the scattering the crew on the planet and like being forced to and then having an original ship we said spoiler warning, but having the USS Franklin be there and them able, I don't know how they're able to get it working again, but got it working again and use that. I thought that was really cool.
Question Scotty's methods, Ron.
I know, Scotty's shit
done. Also, it was so interesting to see them take on the Star Trek Enterprise. You know, the very early on, this is the first one capable going of what? I think it's over warp 4, and the Enterprise from the show went to warp 5. I'm pretty sure that's it. But that was really surprising to me. Talk about spoiler alert. I mean, I was just like, it was so cool. Like, wow, you guys are really embracing all of Star Trek, not just the original series. You know, and that was really clever, I thought.
Yeah.
But you guys want to talk about the Idris Elba and how that race I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, I mean, so the question is, did you guys guess the twist on him? I guessed it actually fairly early on.
Oh, I know. I was completely surprised.
I was actually surprised too. I didn't get that.
And I'm not patting my back. The moment that they discovered the old video of the crew. We saw it fleetingly, and then later on we come back to it when Uhura realizes who he is, but. We saw it fleetingly. I thought I saw him in the background, but either way, for some reason I was like, "Oh, he's from the original crew."
So it wasn't Idris Elba didn't lean over and tell you to pay attention when they showed that. That was okay. Yeah, that was.
He was at the time he was getting me a drink.
Yeah. They had the VIP lounge over there. We didn't feel like getting.
He's great. He's great. He commands the screen. I thought it was interesting the way the only thing was kind of. The way his face kept changing and he would sort of suck the life force out of people was a little like science fiction-y for Star Trek.
Yeah, well, it was almost like Warcraft.
I thought this, between him and Jayla and some of the aliens, it was almost – and one of the criticisms of this series has been this is almost the Star Warsian Star Trek, and this might have felt the most Star Warsian with all the aliens and all – and.
So there was There was a lot of aliens in this. There were a lot. I mean, which is, I guess, makes sense. You know,
alien species for the 50th. So there's 50 different alien species in the movie. But
let's back up and talk about how freaking awesome the starbase. I thought.
I was gonna say Yorktown was amazing. I thought that was so cool. The fact that it was just like this spinning city
it was spinning like Interstellar or the Expanse. You know, like. Yeah, the base was in a tube. So it was
like a Dyson sphere meets the Tomorrowland universe. I mean, I thought that was great. I mean, maybe you don't need to have the large spaceship going underneath the river. It seems like a really sort of costly thing to do, but it was beautiful to look at. And again, what was nice is that. You felt that optimism of Star Trek. Like, you want that in Star Trek. You really want to see a starbase that is like, man, that is – I want to live in that future. Like, there was a real nice aspirational feeling to a lot of this film.
There was a lot – I agree with you. There's a lot of aspiration. But, Connor, you mentioned it too. There was a lot of little points that reminded me of The Expanse.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Like just little kind of nudges and nods, and I was just like, "Oh, interesting." Yeah, but I thought the Yorktown was really, really impressive. I thought once they figured out the Idris Elba's plan and what they needed to do, I thought the use of the music was great. I mean, some people might cringe at that, but I love the idea of that. This is our future.
It's never been that starkly laid out before. We had it in the first movie and it's the callback. It's the same song from when Kirk stole his stepfather's car the first time, but. You've never had it laid out like, oh right, this is in 200 years.
That's classical music.
That was a great line. Is that classical music? It's never been the connection's never been that sort of stark in these films before. This is
that's almost like the kind of Star Trek IV kind of humor, right? Yeah. You know, it's all about frequency. It wouldn't matter what song they played, right? But they still are just going to have fun with it. I've got the words and the beats ready. Like that's great. I want to hear that in the song. And we should. I guess we should talk about the Jayla, the character.
I thought she was fine.
Yeah. I'd actually be interested in her coming back as like an ensign in the fourth film. Like I thought she plays off well with the, you know, it's the classic sort of native character is flummoxed by, you know, modern society, but is smart as, and can handle the technology. So it was, but it, it worked well. She was funny and she was a badass.
I appreciated, like, she was a badass and she wasn't Kirk's love interest. Yeah. And if anything, Kirk was impatient. You know, it's like, look, you can help me. What I see in you is that you can help me. Like, Kirk,
well, I mean, was she Scotty's love interest? That seemed like
Yeah.
Well, he wrote the movie, so obviously.
I can't help but I wonder if you saw this, Ron. But when she first fights them and she multiplies into threes, my first thought was Nova from Heroes of the Storm.
Yes.
And I was so pissed. I was like, I really empathize with those guys because you're going to hit her and it's going to be the wrong one. But like that was really fun. And I did like her trap, you know, freezing them. And that was just funny. There were some things that worked as plot devices, but they let that be funny as well.
Yeah, and then it all tied. I mean, honestly, I give Simon Pegg and whoever he co-wrote the movie with, Connor, you know the name.
Yes, but, it's Doug Jung who played Sulu's husband, which I think we should talk about in a second. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I thought they wrote a great movie because I feel as like every little thing that I noticed paid off later on.
Oh, it was very well constructed.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of those movies that if you were a kid back in the day, you could see it with your friends and spend the afternoon talking about different scenes and not, you know, and like really being excited to see it again. And, you know, and really, Ron, as great as it was where we saw it, I mean, the black levels weren't that, you know, as hard. It was, you know, it's an outdoor theater. The sound was kind of muddy. There was an echo. So it wasn't perfect. I mean, Chris Pine, he does make a mean Manhattan. But, like, other than that, there were a couple things. I mean, as I did really like the film, but there were a couple things that even I was a little bit – the only time that I got a little bit slow with the film was I felt the middle dragged a bit and the whole motorcycle – oh, it just happens to be the motorcycle, and then he does that whole thing – driving around the motorcycle, it beggared my suspension of disbelief a little bit that the triplicator would be able to plot out all those different motorcycles. Like a lot of it, that was the one fantasy sequence to me that kind of brought me out of it was that whole motorcycle sequence. I thought that was a little bit out of.
Had no issue whatsoever. In fact, I kind of it gave me a little Great Escape kind of.
Totally.
You know, like,
oh, I love
like,
the bike.
Yeah, like I mean, and it would make sense that that old ship would have that sort of thing because they were exploring and like and it's a callback to his father, which I'm sure mention it towards the end of this. But you know, I didn't have any, and I thought it was so cool with the using the image inducer, like once again something that we saw earlier in the movie paying off again. And
I was actually surprised when it happened. I was like, right, that's a good idea.
And it was the distraction, and then we got the you know, the Jayla's fighting the guy who killed her father, and the great transporter scene. It all worked for me. I thought there wasn't, honestly, I have a hard time criticizing anything in this movie, to be honest with you. I don't think it was perfect, but I think it was imperfect enough to be so enjoyable, and it hit all the right notes and kept me entertained and laughing
some other notes.
Well, hold on. I have a couple of my. I have one real negative thing. I think the non-real negative thing is the sad thing is that we talked about the balance of the film. The one character who didn't really get a ton to do was Chekhov, which is sad. Yelchin died. But the only thing that bugged me through the entire film, and it's such a nitpick, is I really hated the uniform redesign.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
the collars.
What made me laugh was they got on Yorktown and all of a sudden Kirk is in this weird leisure suit, right? and then when the escape pods, him and Chekhov are in these like field outfits, and I'm like, did the escape pods have another outfit that ties to them? Like, how did they get these clothes? Like, it was
right. I love that these films they're in their classic 60s t-shirt uniforms, but to me, when you minimize the black around the neck, it changes the whole look. It just looked like they were wearing gold shirts. The black sets it off. You need that black. And you when they had the collars covered it up,
what did you think of the away suit? I like the away suit.
The away suits were great. I didn't like the collars that covered the black except for the very front. Visually, it wasn't as striking. They were just sitting in these colored shirts instead of having the black trim around it. It's a minor thing, but I thought it changed the whole visual dynamic of the way they looked. and just bugged the crap out of me.
Yeah, I can see that. It's interesting. They're like wearing Steve Jobs mock turtlenecks.
Right, exactly.
You fucking nerd.
I know. I said it was a
Well, I'm balancing it out. I'm going to balance it out because when talk about hitting notes, I thought the whole deal with how they dealt with the Leonard Nimoy Spock passing was just really elegantly done.
And well, so that was
crying notes. Yeah.
That was the second note that I got emotional was when young Spock is looking at old Spock's effects, and in it there's a photo of the crew from circa
Star Trek 5.
Was it 5? Okay, yeah. And when I saw that, I knew
I started all that. I completely lost it. I don't know how your audience reacted to it, but obviously, like our audience broke into applause several times. But that one got sustained applause, and it was really, you know, it was unexpected. It was a delight, and it felt earned, and it made sense, and just dramatically, it was maybe what it took Spock to really realize that this. He deserves a family as well. That Spock in the other reality, these were his friends, and that was special to him, and it reminded him of just how special.
You know, that was his central conflict. He was going to go off and leave Starfleet and join the Vulcan Science Council, High Command, whatever it was.
High Command,
and make little baby Vulcans, which I thought was really funny.
That was actually made sense in the context of the story, right? He feels a responsibility to further the Vulcan race, and if he's dating Uhura, he can't. He can't make Vulcan babies. And I really wanted him to come out of that scene and suggest Scotty grow a mustache. That's really what I wanted.
Yeah.
That was a great scene, and it was very emotional in the fact that Nichelle Nichols was there in the audience. That made it more emotional. Yeah. But
and Anton Yelchin's parents were actually there too, which was intense.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, this was super fun. Now so before the film came out, you know, they announced that Sulu was gay in these films. In this movie, we see his husband. And there was a minor controversy because George Takei, who's very outspoken and active gay man, is an advocate. He's very public in his advocacy for gay rights, vehemently disagreed with that decision, which I think no one probably expected from that team on the film. It was very minor in the film. It's like 3 seconds.
I thought it was if anything is handled the right way, like that's what it was. Like he arrived at Yorktown and his husband and daughter was there waiting for him, and they just put his arm around him. Like they didn't make a big deal of it. Like I thought it was fine.
It didn't bother me at all. Actually, it did get applause in the audience that we were with. I thought it was going to be a lot. I wish I hadn't heard about it because I actually would have been pleasantly surprised. I honestly think. I think that people were really overblowing it. They're going to do what they're going to do with these films, but I think there was a level of inclusion there. Maybe it was capital I inclusion, but it felt organic. It was not heavy handed, and I thought it was appropriate in as much as how they wanted. If they were going to do it, I thought they did it in a good way.
Yeah. I that's the thing is that like, I mean, I get George Takei's argument in that just because I'm gay doesn't mean the character I played has to be gay and like that sort of thing, which I could see him kind of getting annoyed. But like at the same time, like, I don't know. It's fine. It's fine. I had no problem with it. I think it's nice. So there you go. There was no end credit sequence, but there was a very touching, you know, in memory of Leonard Nimoy and then for Anton, was sad.
I loved seeing. So this is kind of nerdy. My friend Robert, he works at NASA, and he didn't really like the first two films. He's a huge Star Trek person, but one of the huge fan. But he loved this film. But one of the things that had always annoyed him about the 1701 in the Pine universe, I guess that's what people are calling it, is that the warp nacelles were too close to each other. And apparently, when we talked to our friend at Paramount, she said that really bothered Justin Lin as well, which may have been the reason he took on the film, so he could blow it up, because now the warp nacelles are farther apart and look much better. So it was nice to see that they had rectified and addressed what was truly a glaring issue about the original show.
To go back to a downer note on the Anton Yelchin thing, in your guys' cut, I don't know if it's different in my cut, but at the very end when they're there for Kirk's birthday and he does the toast and he says to the Enterprise and for those who can't be here, and then the camera cut to a shot of Chekhov.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, which it was like right after he said that and it cut right to him. And I was like, oh, that's that had to have been purposeful, you know.
Yeah. I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
It was pretty obvious. Like the cast had really, they were thrilled to be here. But boy, it was heavy. It was on a dour note.
Yeah, on a dour note. And I like that they announced that they're not going to replace him. That they're just going to, you know, they'll.
Well, I think that allows Jayla to take his spot as a.
Maybe.
I kind of hope they don't do that, but I'm sure the fans would love it. I did think she was good. She was really interesting, just from a silly PR point of view. She was really needs some press training.
She was terrible in the interview.
Well, she's just terrified. Like Conan O'Brien's like, "Hey, how you doing?" She's like, "Good." Yeah, okay. Awkward first meeting in front of 3,000 people, but okay. She's like, ha, ha, ha.
So speaking of the warp nacelles that you mentioned earlier, Mike, so we saw the new Enterprise at the end of it.
Yeah.
I thought it looked pretty badass.
I thought it looked fine, but I didn't have I wasn't biased. I wasn't a nacellist.
Yeah.
But I thought it looked great. I mean, part of me would have, for some reason, now that we knew that they're doing another film, it would have been nice to get some more time on the base and take her out again. But, you know, I thought this was fun too, that next time we see the crew, they're going to be in the middle of maybe year four or year five.
It was cool to watch the time lapse building.
Yeah, I thought that was a great reward. Yeah. That was great. You didn't leave sort of on a down note with the Enterprise being blown up. They made that decision. It was fun to watch. And it took you right back out to space again, really setting up for the next film. And again, leaving it up on a very optimistic note. Yeah. Super duper fun.
Let's switch gears here and talk about something I know Mike has more angst about.
Two things.
So they announced right before this movie came out that they are already going to do a fourth, although this one didn't do so well at the box office.
It's like $60 million.
For a third movie
in the cycle.
They expect each sequel to get to do more each the opening weekend than the one before.
It just showed them that they kind of messed up with that other one.
Yeah.
And the marketing.
Marketing was really bad. Yeah, the marketing was bad, but also it's a rough weekend. I mean, like July, people on vacation, they're out. I don't know. It's just honestly, the 3-day total with Into Darkness, it's off by 3 million. I mean, it's not Into Darkness after 3 days did 62 million and Beyond did 59 million. So
I think Into Darkness did 70.
No, 60, 62. I'm seeing
70.2.
It was 70 million opening weekend.
Well, to be fair,
3-day total, 3-day totals.
It might have been on a 4-day weekend, but it was a 70 opening weekend. Anyway, the point is they announced the fourth one.
We had really good fireworks, and as Conan said, that was the marketing budget for the film, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, I think part of it too. We're seeing a lot of billboards, but I don't know. I don't think the billboards are just sort of showing Beyond and showing the ship, but they're not really showing anything to bite into with the film, seemingly, but I don't know. It seems like I'm hoping word of mouth is really good on this. I hope people go see
it. It's probably the most fun. Like, you know, it's a direct tonal difference to Batman v Superman.
It is.
And even Civil War, which is sort of a downer because all the heroes are fighting each other. This is just a romp, and it's a spectacle. Anyway, back to they announced the fourth film, and they also announced that Chris Hemsworth would be returning to the film. He played George Kirk in the opening of the first film. He died at the hands of Nero. And
I want to hear Mike's reaction, and then I'll add a counterpoint.
I think I heard Mike groan through the wall
I'm tired of going back in time. I don't want a Kirk with daddy issues, right? I just let him be him. I was already annoyed at the second film with, you know, Leonard Nimoy. I like Leonard Nimoy. I love Leonard Nimoy. But I kept feeling like we kept going back to Spock. And now we're going to go back to dead Kirk. I want to cut free from anything in the past and just move forward. I feel like I don't know how they're going to do it. Maybe it'll just be a really nice detailed hologram. But if it's something like blowing up the Enterprise, for me it feels lazy. And first of all, I don't even know what the point of having him come back. Let Kirk be his own thing.
All right, so Mike, I'm gonna, with all due respect, point counterpoint. Jane, you ignorant slut. And Mike, I love you and I love the dedication. They haven't even written the goddamn movie yet.
I know. Well, why even announce it? If you're not even writing the movie, then why did it even – you're going to cast it? What is this, the Marvel way of making movies? Yes. You're going to cast it and write the story? No, you write the story. That makes sense.
That seems to be doing well for Marvel, doesn't it?
Well, I think that. Well, is that for? I mean.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Hemsworth is a name. He's tied to the legacy. He was only in the first movie for 5 minutes, not even.
Make that so great, which makes it so valuable and wonderful.
And then so now they announce that, and they're Marvel's leading up to promote Thor Ragnarok. You don't think they're going to ask him questions about it when he's doing press for Thor? Right? I mean, like, I understand.
Why are you in that new movie?
Yeah, well, I think Mike, just have an open mind. Let him. Clearly, they have a plan.
An open mind. I went to the premiere. My God.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, when you're sitting next to Carl Urban and Idris Elba, it's hard to say no to that.
I just don't even know why they would announce the casting without. I'd rather let them enjoy the weekend, take a few weeks off, be stoked that they get to make another movie, write the best movie possible, and if there's a scene with the dad in it. Great, but I don't understand pre-announcing. It's like it seems silly to me. And also, I mean, Hemsworth is great, but it's not.
It's not Robert De Niro. It's not like some amazing actor that they got. We got Chris Hemsworth.
Let's not slag like Hemsworth. Making a, beautiful blue eyes. All right,
It's like when they were making the first Star Trek and they were advertising it with Gene Hackman and Marlon Brando before they shot anything. It reminds me of that a lot. But I'm openly antagonistic about it, but I will see it. But I do think again, Chris Pine is such a good. Captain Kirk, that first sequence, the way he holds himself, is muttering under the breath. We actually got to see a little bit of a different side of Captain Kirk. There's not a lot of scenes in the series or the movies where we see him sort of struggling with if he's doing the right thing or not. Like I loved getting a little bit a different angle on his internal monologue. I loved that he was getting just kind of tired of all of this stuff. And I thought Chris Pine again echoes everything that a fan or even a casual viewer would appreciate about Shatner's Kirk, but really still makes it his own. And again, I don't know. He just feels like such a captain to me. Yeah, I think he really makes it.
I've been pro Chris Pine since the first movie. I think he's great, and he is Kirk now, and I think that he's well deserved. He's fantastic, and even the hesitation and the moment. Before calling it with the Enterprise and saying abandon ship, you can see, I kept on waiting. I'm like, when are they gonna abandon the ship? Like, they clearly they're not gonna survive this. Yeah. And you know that they're trying to figure out, they're trying to make it work. Let's do the saucer sep. Let's do all this other,
Totally. And, dude, I think the ship's gonna blow up. No, I'm gonna go down there.
Yeah, we'll go to impulse, full impulse. Yeah. So
I love Rod getting really, really worried in the theater. What's going on? Yeah. Why is he waiting? What's going on?
Wait, get out of there! Get out of there! Yeah. Nimoy did great again. He looked even more like the child version of himself in the first film. He sort of filled out a little bit.
Quinto. Hey, here's my other weird nitpick. So during one of the scenes with Spock, I was like, why does he bug me a little bit? And I realized it's because his face is so smooth.
Well, they got great skin.
Nimoy had all this great character to his face, right? He had those deep lines in his cheeks. And
he's older.
He wasn't that much older, actually, when they made the original series. Yeah. It's just that Quinto has got this super baby-faced, smooth face. And good for him, but, he doesn't exude the wisdom and the experience that Nimoy did. The sort of... Mm-hmm. He was sort of patrician in that he... He felt like this fount of wisdom because he had lived it. Whereas, it worked in the first film because they were all young. It was like their start of their careers. But now, 3 years in, he still has this baby face, and it's just, it doesn't, it's a weird change. And the other guys are just people, but Nimoy had that really specific kind of look to him that it's just a little unusual.
Another thing, I know we've been and there are a lot of details in this film, which is a great thing that we can talk about, but I do have to call out that whole running joke about Spock giving Uhura a tracking device as a piece of jewelry. That little joke.
That was funny. Yeah.
I thought that was very, very funny. There were some, and he had some really good looks. I thought Urban and Quinto had a blast making these moments together. Like, they were really funny and really good together, which was a nice surprise. I didn't expect it.
Yeah.
So the other thing that happened this weekend is that Star Trek Discovery is the new series that's going to be on CBS's digital network, which I'm now probably going to have to fucking buy.
Which I heard the app is awful.
But I'm sure it's awful. But yeah. I'm on such a Star Trek high right now. There's probably no way I'm not going to pay the $6 a month.
We'll see if that high lasts until January.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how it could with this new War Machine Federation mashup ship.
This weekend,
apparently Macquarie made. I don't believe it.
At Comic-Con, they released a little video showing the ship, the Star Trek Discovery. I mean, Star Trek Discovery is the name of the show, but the ship, the USS Discovery, is the name of the ship. And it's very, very similar to Macquarie's redesign of the Enterprise for Star Trek Planet of the Titans that was never made. Yeah. And Mike did not like it. Ron, did you see it, and do you have thoughts on it?
I saw it. I'm excited. I love it. I love new ship.
It literally looks like a Klingon bird of prey just rammed right into the back of a saucer section and said, let's go.
Cool.
And it also, for me, it looked like a war. It looks like a warship. It's got the sort of Zack Snyder lighting on it. I thought the tone is all weird. I really feel like look like Discovery.
It's literally a minute of the ship leaving the dock.
Bring me back into Star Trek. This is how I get.
Listen, it's a lot better
asteroid? Is it the moon?
It's a lot better than that country Enterprise theme song. Oh, so
that was the worst. But I learned to love it. It was a beautiful montage.
Yeah, and you'll learn to love this, I think, as well, too. I'm excited.
I mean, Well, we can talk about. Well, maybe we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I'm down for that. So.
But all in all, the thing is, I was really nervous leaving the theater that I would wake up the next morning or two mornings later and like have this flood. I'm actually kind of glad that we waited a couple of days to talk about it because reality came creeping in, and I'm really so relieved and thrilled to say that I still think the movie was super fun. I want to see it again. Even the things that I wasn't crazy about are so minor when you compare it to what happened with Into Darkness, and even some moments of the first film. I think I wish this was the second film.
Yeah.
And even you could make an argument that if you just tweaked the third film a bit, at least those moments would have been more earned. But if this were the second film, I mean, maybe the second film will just be it's like a DVD extra. But because this one really, really succeeded as a spiritual sequel to the first one and really showed that Paramount was serious about, you know, riding the ship. And I'm really happy that they're making a fourth one. That makes me really happy. I love this crew, and I can't wait to see where we're going to go next.
Yeah, me too. I'm on board. I love this crew, and let's do more. I'm excited.
I think the world's a better place when there's good Star Trek happening. That's my feeling.
Absolutely, because even if you don't like something, you can at least these arguments are fun. You know what I mean? It's like it's something that we can talk about, and it's like we're excited about the next film. And clearly, everyone involved with this really cares about Star Trek, and that joy really came out when you have that sort of authenticity. It gets the fans really excited. So I think the world is a better place, unless you start, opening the news.
All right, so if you saw Star Trek Beyond, go to iFanboy.com. There'll be posts for this show. You can tell us what you thought of it, and we can talk Star Trek there. We can discuss Discovery and whether or not Mike is overreacting.
Yeah, bring it.
The sheer force of the discussions, Ron, after the movie from the Super Star Trek nerds in my group was like a blast furnace had gone off.
Talking about the
distance of the nacelles, and I was like, I'm going to have to go get a drink.
It was intense.
I can't be in this conversation.
It was awesome. And we all have these really nice little enamel pins of the Franklin, which I got to say, they look
very cool. Very cool.
Go to iFanboy.com, talk about the show. You can also find our other podcast, the Pick of the Week podcast, every week on iFanboy.com, where we talk the newest comic books. And we'll be back for a special show.
Suicide Squad?
Suicide Squad is next, yeah, right? That's August 22nd.
Suicide Squad is the big show, August 5th.
August 5th.
Wow. So many Harlequins at Comic-Con.
Don't even start. I'm sure. Yeah. Wow. So that's next weekend, isn't it?
No.
Two weekends from now. Okay. Yeah. Fun. I'm excited for that. I've seen 9 trailers for it, and everyone is better than the first.
Yes.
Isn't it the sequel that's coming out? I wasn't the first. The first trailer came out like 4 years ago or something. It feels so long.
Yeah. Anyway. 4 years ago. All right. So check it out. We'll be back next time for that. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Live long and prosper. I'm Mike.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.